And I think also a lot of schools are really still stuck on using, I call them like band-aid approaches to, covering up maybe some surface issues that are being, that are a result of mental health issues.
Welcome to season two of Schoolin' Around, a podcast hosted by Branchy Minds, featuring prominent leaders, subject matter experts, and thought innovators with their perspectives on the current challenges facing K-12 education. I'm your host, Larissa Napolitan, a former teacher, instructional coach, and a member of the Branchy Minds team, here to lead conversations with educational leaders and experts, and to shine a light on phenomenal educators and those that are on a mission to transform our schools and the lives of students. Maybe you've been listening for a while, or this is your first episode. If you like what you hear, would you do us a favor by rating and reviewing us on iTunes? This is a fantastic way to tell us you enjoy what we are creating. Also, if you want more MTSS resources, sign up for our weekly newsletter using the link in the show notes. I'm excited to welcome back on the podcast Dr. Essie Sutton, who is our Director of Learning Science at Branchy Minds and Applied Developmental Psychologist, which is a mouthful to say. But I'm excited to welcome you here because I know that, I mean, there's big discussions. I see headlines all the time about mental health and students today. And so I invited you here to kind of talk through about the connection between academic performance and mental health and maybe why that might be connected. And so, well, first of all, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Well, okay. So diving into what district and school leaders should know about the connection between student mental health and academic performance. Maybe let's start there.
Yeah. Well, it's, pretty well established in the research and in the literature that student mental health and well-being and their academic performance really do go hand in hand. They are deeply connected. And I think anyone who works with students or works with young people, like it's pretty obvious to see, and we can see it even in ourselves. Like if you are feeling very stressed out, if you're dealing with a lot of anxiety, if you're experiencing something in your life that is affecting your well-being and your mental health, it makes it really hard to focus, to be engaged with what you're learning. And as a result, these things over time just are going to impact how students are performing academically. And what's kind of interesting about this relationship between academic performance and mental health is that it's really this bi-directional relationship. So it's not like just one thing causes the other, but it's like they're kind of going back and forth and influencing each other over time. And, as students might be experiencing some kind of stress or anxiety or depression or some kind of mental health issue that's going to impact how they're doing academically. And then that poor academic performance can then almost like make those feelings of anxiety or those issues more strong. And then it's almost like this, we call it in developmental science, this like cascading effect where it's like over time, these issues seem to get worse and worse. And again, that's why, early intervention is so important because you really want to be interrupting those negative cascades.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking, I was like, my word for it is a vicious cycle. Like it just gets to this point of like, and I think many adults can probably attest to this of like, when you are having a bad day and then you're not doing great at work, like how that connects, it doesn't make your day any better. And so, I think that the question then would be how do we interrupt that cascading effect? What's the point of, stopping that or like turning that around because I would think that it goes in the other direction. Like when you're doing well in school, it may contribute to more positive mental health. So, what do you see maybe as a barrier for educators to kind of interrupt that cycle?
Well, there are a lot of barriers that exist, and you know, sometimes it just comes down to the resources that educators have. You know, there are things that can be done universally to really promote student wellness and student mental health and well-being, and things like social emotional learning. And those are all really great things, but you're always going to have a need for more intensive support. There are always going to be students who need more. And this often comes down to a resource issue. You know, having the staff who have the appropriate training and background and experience to work with students in the context of schools to provide that additional, more intensive mental health support. I think that is a huge barrier for schools, is just having those resources in place and the training that goes along with it. And I think also a lot of schools are really still stuck on using, you know, I call them like band-aid approaches to, you know, covering up maybe some surface issues that are being, that are a result of mental health issues. I think a really good example is, you know, suspensions for behavioral issues. I see that as a band-aid in many situations. I mean, I'm sure there are situations where, you know, student safety is at risk, and there are definitely cases where students need to be removed from a school for a certain period of time. But for the most part, you know, suspending a student, like maybe, yes, the punishment makes them not want to engage in a certain behavior for a period of time, but it's really like applying a band-aid. It's not really getting at those underlying reasons why a student might be behaving a certain way. And I have an example. I mean, not sure if you want to include this or
not. Oh, yes. The example, I think an example is very helpful for our listeners.
Okay. Yeah. So this just happened yesterday, actually, because I was at the grocery store, and my local grocery store is right next to a high school. So at certain times of the day, it's like, you know, lunchtime at school, I'll like sneak over to get some groceries, and there'll be a lot of students, like high school students, at the grocery store, like getting stuff for lunch. And when I was checking out, the cashier told me that the police were there because a student had just been caught shoplifting. And I could see by the door that there was two police officers talking to a high school student. So as I left the store, I could overhear them. And I heard the police officer saying to the student that he was going to be suspended from school. And this was, it seemed to me like some kind of just, you know, standard thing. You're caught shoplifting, it's technically during school hours, you're going to be suspended. And, you know, if you think about it, like, what's the point of that? Why would a student who's been caught shoplifting get suspended? Like, what does one really have to do with the other? I understand there being some kind of punishment. I mean, it's a crime, it's illegal to shoplift, but in terms of what happens at school, like, I feel like there's so much more that can be done to really understand, you know, why did that student shoplift, and how can we help them get to a place where they're not doing this behavior anymore, as opposed to just being like, well, now you don't have to come to school for a week. That's your punishment. Yeah. So I think to me, that's an example of like using a band-aid approach to something that really is potentially a mental health issue.
Yeah. Well, and I think that is very difficult, I think, for schools, because of the sort of, I would say, typical policies that are in place. And I think there are many school leaders that they feel like their hands are tied of like how to address these issues, you know? And so we see a lot of schools trying out the restorative practices approach of really trying to help students understand the consequences of their actions and how that may impact other people around them. But I do think that idea of like, when it comes to things that are clearly symptoms of maybe a larger issue for that student, you know, having either the people that are trained to help that student, or also I would say even community resources. Because I think sometimes it isn't always the school resources. The school may not have the personnel, you know, that has the training, but even the connection to personal resources. And I know that, like, we'll talk on the podcast a lot about just connections with, whether it be virtual mental health opportunities or either just like connections within the community, I think are really important to address those needs. And I also think that is really examining those policies of like, okay, what is it that we're doing that may help or can, you know, not help the problem, not really address the issue at hand, and what could we do to help those students? And so that's a great example. Was there anything else you wanted to add, just maybe as other barriers that students or schools are seeing in addressing those mental health issues?
Yeah, I think it, you know, it comes down to resources, like you said, maybe not having those key partnerships in place with community organizations, or those connections not being really streamlined. And then, you know, just having the capacity to really have a strong support system for student mental health. I think that's just, it's just things that people struggle with. I mean, it's a lot of work and educators have a ton on their plate. And so sometimes, and it's just the case where we often see, you know, academics are really pushed to the forefront. They're seen as the most important, and things like mental health and behavior can kind of be sidelined a bit. So I think those are all kind of barriers that educators have to really deal with if they want to make any big changes.
Well, and I think in the classroom, that barrier is really evident. I mean, the barrier to learning is happening if a student is in crisis or they're not in class. Like, that is a big barrier to learning. And so, like, I think that if leaders are taking the approach of understanding how much mental health does impact that academic performance, like, that has to be taken care of before learning can happen.
Yeah.
I'm interrupting this conversation to share another MTSS hero shout out. And just to remind you, MTSS heroes are those educators that are dedicated to the work of supporting students and teachers within the MTSS process. Today, I want to recognize Noemi from Fort Sam Houston ISD in Texas. Noemi was nominated by her colleague Robert, and he says this about her. Noemi has had a significant impact, not only on me, but also our entire team and the students we serve. Her unwavering commitment to fostering a positive and inclusive learning environment has created a ripple effect, inspiring others to do the same. Whether it's offering personalized guidance, implementing innovative teaching methods, or simply being a reliable source of encouragement, she has consistently demonstrated a passion for the success and well-being of students and staff. Thank you, Noemi. Now, back to our conversation.
What do you see as maybe some creative ways that districts are addressing that mental health or those mental health issues within schools?
Yeah, so something that I kind of hear about more often and that I've read about is, you know, a lot more, they call it like flexible scheduling, especially at the middle and high school level. So, you know, instead of having these, you know, blocked out periods for all of our academic subjects, like having built in time into the schedule, like some people call it flex time, or having these extra periods for, you know, more focused on a time and a place where students can get extra help, where they can, you know, talk to a counselor, or, you know, have some of that kind of intervention time. I think scheduling is just a huge, another barrier, sometimes an issue that schools need to overcome, but they also need to realize like, hey, we can change this. Like, we have the ability to adjust our schedule for our students. If the schedule is not serving our students and they're not serving, it's not serving our staff, we can change that. That is something that people can do. Sometimes it's like, it's just the mindset of like, no, this is how our schedule works. Like, we've always had our 7 periods in a day and this is how we've organized it. But really recognizing like that you can carve out time where students can go and get that extra help that they need, or get the support that they need, or you know, whatever it is, I think that can be huge. And the other thing that I hear a lot about, which I think is super interesting, and I'm trying to like read more, or whenever I hear a district doing this, I just want to ask them a million questions. But a big thing is wellness centers. So having on campus spaces that are really dedicated to student wellness. So having counselors or, you know, any kind of mental health professionals that are there and on site, And just having a place that students can go to if students are really stressed out because of exams or, you know, they're experiencing something at home, there's a space in the school that they can go to that's dedicated to supporting their wellness. I think that's really interesting. And I love that schools are really investing in that, because sometimes it really comes down to just having a spot, having a place on campus that students can go to for support. Yeah.
Well, and I know that high school that I worked at a middle school that fed into this high school, and they actually created an on-campus health center that also had nurses and or nurse practitioners, even so like a care mm-hmm. type of situation. So students needed physical help or, you know, physical wellness as well as sort of a mental health practitioners. And I think that was really helpful for many students who maybe didn't have access to that outside of it, or, you know, it prevented them from missing a whole day of school for like a doctor's appointment or like a physical or something like that. But I think that is an interesting solution in a way of bringing those resources to the students, because I think that sometimes even if handing, you know, the parent a card to a mental health provider, and I speak as an adult trying to find a counselor in the vastness of mental, like I talk to many adults that are like, oh, I want to find a counselor. It is really hard to find someone that's in your network, that there's a lot of hoops to jump through to kind of figure that out. Mm-hmm. And so if you can remove that barrier, even if a student's like, oh, it'd be great to see a counselor, but you know, like, you know, oh, here's someone on campus, it makes it really easy for that student to access that. That's that accessibility piece, I think, that could be really helpful for many students. So that's really interesting. I definitely want to like learn more about that as an option. You know, mm-hmm. and it's a great place for, I think it's just a great way to provide the, you know, supporting the whole child in many ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it kind of connects to the flexible scheduling piece too, because if students have like time throughout the day where that's an option where they can go to the wellness center and get help there, or, you know, even just having like a safe space on campus that they can go to and a time where they can do it. Cause I remember when I was in high school, you know, we had spare periods. Like we had periods where we didn't have class and there was nowhere you could go in the building during that time. I mean, maybe you could go to the library, but like no one wanted to go to the library. Like we would all leave the school, and there was nowhere to go in school. But I'm like, wait, what if there was like a place where you could go, or a place you could get extra help with your homework, or, you know, I think it really also shows or sends the message to students and to families, like, you know, we care about your well-being. This is something we're prioritizing, and this is something we think is important. So I think that's another level.
Well, I want to go back to something you said about the scheduling piece, because I do think that there are mm-hmm. many, many schools that are like, well, we've always done this schedule. This is always how it's worked. And I mean, yes, scheduling is like, I've sat in those meetings where you talk about changing up the schedule, and there's a ripple effect to that. And you have to make, there's a lot of like things you have to do. Because you have to have enough personnel and seats for students and all that. But I do think that the takeaway after sort of the pandemic and how, you know, our school pivoted and we did a lot of creative things to help students. And I was just thinking like that energy sort of kind of went away, like everything went back to normal, I guess. And I did love that. I was like, this is our chance. This is our chance to be creative in what we're doing and providing a flexible schedule for students. Like, to sit in a seat for 7 hours a day is really miserable. Like I as adults, we don't love that. Like we need breaks. So like, I think, why are we making our students do that? And so having that flexibility of schedule, even providing opportunities throughout the day for them to have access to different resources is amazing. And again, a safe space for students. So, okay. My last question is, if you could wave a magic wand to give all the schools the money for mental health initiatives, where would you start?
This question is so hard. So, I mean, you know, it's just going back to what we've really been talking about. Like, to me, having the resources, having specifically the staff, the personnel, the people who are trained to be able to do this work. I just think that's where a lot of schools struggle. I mean, in almost every webinar we do on this topic, there's always someone in the chat that says, you know, I work in a small school and like we don't have these people, like we don't have these roles, we don't have these counselors. Like maybe they have a counselor that comes to the school like once a week or once a month, but they're like, it's a huge issue. And so to me, that's where I would put the funds, is to being able to hire these people to be that support person, and not just for the students, yeah, but also for the staff. That's, you know, staff need support too. They're dealing with issues in their classroom, behavioral issues, like having someone there to support them. I think that's important. But I'm also going to say that, you know, I think I heard this once, like recently at a conference, a speaker talk about this, but, and it made me think of this idea of having all the funds and not money, not being an issue. I think even if money was not an issue, I would still recommend that schools really focus on one thing at a time. I think it can, you know, schools sometimes have so many initiatives going on at once. Like they get really excited. They're like, okay, we're going to do this and that, or we're going to have this program, and we're going to use this company, and they're doing all these things. And it's really, really hard to implement a lot of things effectively at the same time. Like something's going to suffer if you're doing all these things. So my advice would be, you know, just focus on one thing at a time. Like do one thing really well. Be like, you know, this year we're really focused on whatever it is, the schedule or wellness centers. You know, focus on one initiative. And once that is really solid, then you can move on to the next thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's what this kind of magic wand thought experiment made me realize. It's like, you know, even with all the money, it's, you still got to think about that implementation. It's, you know, how is the work going to be done? Is it going to be effective? And it's ultimately really difficult to do that if you're being, you know, spread thin across a lot of different projects and
initiatives. Well, I was going to say, if you just flood schools with mental health people, you know, counselors or therapists, you know, they need somewhere to be. And so they need to know this, you know, like you can't just have people show up. You have to have an effective implementation process, and you know, staff has to know what to do. So I think that's all really important. And I also think that you're right that you know, having the dedicated mental health staff, and that's really hard for schools that don't have those resources. And so I know we have partners here at Branching Minds that are or we partner with companies that are providing some of those virtual mental health resources, like Presence and other things like that. So I think that there are things out there, but it is also helping schools make that connection. So Essie, thank you for being here and discussing this. And I know that, like, we know that mental health has a big impact on, you know, student academic performance. And so we hope that, you know, we can help schools just think about that in a little bit different way.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Schoolin' Around, a podcast hosted by Branching Minds. Go ahead and subscribe to our feed wherever you listen to podcasts. And don't forget, if you are enjoying our content, would you do us a favor and rate and review our podcast on iTunes? This helps others find our podcasts and lets us know how much you love what we're creating. Branching Minds is an educational technology company using learning sciences and technology to help districts effectively personalize learning through MTSS. To learn more about us, check out our website, branchingminds.com, or follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn at Branching Minds.